Forgers and Artists, True Stories. Narrated by Paul Spera. The Greenhalg Family, Master Forgers. The Greenhalg family name is famous in the art world thanks to three of its members. First, there's Sean, born in 1961, still living with his parents. He's what you would call self-taught. He left school at 16 and flunked out of the Royal Marines because he couldn't swim. The only job he seems to have held was as a shop clerk in a convenience store. No artistic education whatsoever. And yet, without him, this scheme would never have existed. He is the forger. Sean's father, George Greenhalg, was born in 1923. From the 1950s until his retirement, he's the custodian of a technology institute. Olive Roscoe, Sean's mother, born in 1925, works for a local diaper factory. She will make the fake certificates. They cram together with Sean's younger brother, George Jr., and the boy's aunt into a small two-bedroom house in the suburbs of Manchester, in Bolton, to be exact. Between 1989 and 2006, this trio swindles museums, auction houses, and private buyers around the world, making over £1 million from the sale of 100 forgeries. They are not ordinary forgers specializing in paintings or sculptures, no. The story that follows shows the great diversity of Sean's talents. Scotland Yard called the Greenhalg family the most diverse team of forgers in the world. But let's go back to the beginning. Sean's very first known forgery is a 10th-century reliquary. George, his father, explained to the curator of the Bolton Museum that he'd come across it while walking along a riverbank with a metal detector. Unconvinced by the quality of the object, the man nevertheless buys it off George for £100, all the while describing everything that makes the fake not look like the real thing. Mr. Greenhalg has just taken his first course in forgery. But is it really the first? A neighbor says he remembers hearing George in the pub telling tall tales from the 60s. George is a mythomaniac. He makes up stories as fast as he breathes. When he discovers his son's talents, he withdraws almost completely from the world, stops telling stories in the pub, and instead trains young Sean. George is the brains of the family. Sean is an introvert, a shy man who never leaves his house and has no friends. He is the worker. As an example, George will explain later at trial that he can't hear very well because ever since the Italian campaign, he has two bullets in his head and one in his spine. He has accumulated an impressive collection of medals for his feats of arms. We will discover, in reality, that he spent the 6 years of his mobilization in prison for desertion. A painting by Samuel Peploe, an early 20th century Scottish artist, was Sean's second attempt. Olive and George took it to London and presented themselves to Peter Nahum just before closing time at his Leicester Gallery in Piccadilly. They asked for only £15,000, but after a quick look at the painting, the gallery owner offered them £20,000 for the sake of honesty, as this kind of work is valued at £50,000. Peter Nahum realized the same night that the painting was probably a fake. He informed the police. But in 1990, Scotland Yard's art squad had only two officers for the entire United Kingdom. Dick Ellis, its chief, was overwhelmed by the Myatt Drew case, another pair of forgers, which was in full swing. This first complaint against Greenhalg was dismissed. After this narrow escape, the Greenhalgs realize they need to do their research. Sean, especially. He scours the works of the municipal library to find out how to make objects from antiquity. He consults rare books intended only for scholars or experts in art history. He finds objects that are sufficiently well described to allow them to be made, but without pictures, or that have disappeared long enough for them not to be easily recognized. He discovers the existence of a Roman silver dish called the Risley Park Lanx, found in six pieces by a plowman in the 18th century. He immediately sets to work. George returns to London with Sean's Roman dish, this time to CB Antiquities. The antiquarian, Peter Clayton, consults the British Museum, which refuses to see the original Risley Park Lanx, but admits that it could be a period copy. A patron buys it for £93,000 as a gift to the British Museum. The dish is displayed next to the other real antiques for visitors from all over the world to see. 3 years later, another of Sean's fakes, a mask, lands in the museum. The curator, Leslie Webster, discovers that the metal is modern, and therefore the object is necessarily a counterfeit. Upon learning that it came from the same cellar as the dish, she unearths the files of rejected objects sent by the Greenhalgh family since 1989. A Roman buckle, an Anglo-Saxon helmet, a reliquary, a gold falcon, a ring, a dish, in all, a dozen fakes. Each object was addressed to a different department of the museum with a different history, and nobody had connected the dots. The British Museum has enough evidence to contact Scotland Yard, who could arrest the forgers directly. But the police department is sorely understaffed. The officer in charge of arresting the family of forgers is constantly put on more urgent matters. Sean Greenhalgh feels that he must abandon antiquities and focus on more modern works of art. He excels to the point of making specialists rewrite art history with his Gauguin-like fawn. In the report made by screenwriter Nick Hornby, the art critic and documentary presenter Valdemar Januszak can be heard explaining with an air of conviction that this is the artist's first ceramic work, which he signs with the initials PGO, pronounced Pago, as on his later paintings. This is a slang word meaning penis, learned by Gauguin during his travels as a sailor. The expert deduces from the lack of attributes of the fawn that the artist is expressing his sexual problems with his wife by this means. Anne-Brigitte Fonsmark, a Gauguin specialist, sees in it the representation of the sculptor's brother-in-law, whom he hated. The sculpture was a way to castrate him by proxy. The statue is presented at Sotheby's Auction House by Olive Greenhalgh under her maiden name. The fake is sold in 1993 for £20,700 to London dealers, who then sell it in November 1994 to the Art Institute of Chicago for £180,000. For his next move in January 2002, George contacts the Bolton Museum and explains that he found an ancient-looking Egyptian statuette under his stairs. Angela Thomas, Deputy Director of Culture at Bolton Town Hall and head of the museum's Egyptian antiquities, goes to the site. George makes Mrs. Thomas believe that he's had the object appraised and that it might be worth £500. The director is not of this opinion. According to Angela, this is an Egyptian sculpture in the style of Amarna art, representing the bust of a sister of the pharaoh Tutankhamun. The work will be called The Princess of Amarna. Christie's Auction House estimates its value at £500,000. The Bolton Museum is looking for patrons to acquire the work. In the end, it's a real coup for the Greenhalgh family, as they pocket £439,767 paid by the Bolton Council. Even Queen Elizabeth II comes to contemplate the statuette. It's a great pride for the museum, for the town, and for England. The enormity of the sum frightens Sean, who nevertheless does not give up making fakes. In June 2005, moved by a kind of inner strength that he cannot control, he makes 3 stone panels, Assyrian bas-reliefs. These will be estimated at £300,000 each. George once again chooses the British Museum to send photos of his son's work. The museum wants to see the antiquities in real life before considering acquiring them. George is now too old to travel, so he sends his son alone. The museum is finally interested in only one of the 3 panels. Sean takes the others to an auction house, Bonhams. Richard Falconer, a consultant for the auction house, will uncover the deception immediately. He even thinks it's a joke because the mistake seems so big. It's not the right stone, the style doesn't fit. A detail on the horse's muzzles also proves the counterfeit. The police are alerted, and this time they go to the family home in March 2006. Inspector Ian Lawson and Vernon Rapley, the head of Scotland Yard's art squad, describe the search. They find many art books, 2 other Amarna princesses abandoned in the middle of the clutter. Under the parents' bed, wet paper is being dried to make fake antique papers. A silver dish is being carved with a knife in the Roman style. The entire house is full of evidence. Upstairs, Patriarch George Granhaug awaits them. He's 83 years old, weak, and does not leave the premises anymore. He occupies this upstairs room alone, while the other four family members share the second room. The detectives are surprised by the misery in which this family lives, even though they've made hundreds of thousands of pounds from the art world. Questioned at length, Sean confesses everything. He clears his family, but the police don't believe it. In front of the precision of the descriptions and the details Sean gives, though, in spite of their astonishment, the policemen must give themselves over to the obvious. Sean is the only one responsible. The experts are upset and blame each other. Because of his age and his apparent handicap, George will only be sentenced to 2 years in prison with a suspended sentence. His neighbors say they never saw him in a wheelchair before his trial. Olive received a 1 year suspended sentence, and Sean received a 4.5 year sentence. In all, the family will have earned £800,000. This is one of the puzzles of this story. How could a family with so much money continue to live in such destitute conditions? Vernon Rapley says that when George was asked about this, he simply replied that he had 6 pairs of new socks in his drawer and wanted nothing more. But then, why go through all the trouble? Did you like this episode? Feel free to comment, share, and rate it. See you soon for new stories. Midnight Studio, addictive podcast creator.